Colin said. Richard wiped his hands back across his face. Maybe she has a point.
Maybe she does,
Colin admitted reluctantly. Well, good night. Sleep well.
You too. I'll be thinking about you in that little guest room you use.
He bent and kissed her cheek. Not going to bed right off.
Where are you going?
Oh, I thought I'd go dunk myself in a horse trough. She caught him by the wide, leather-padded band around his wrist.
Richard, I don't know if I can stand this much longer. Are we ever going to get married before something else happens?
We'll go wake the Slift just as soon as we make sure everything here is in order. I promise.
Dear spirits, I promise. What things?
Just as soon as we know that the men are getting better, and I'm satisfied about a few other things. I want to make sure that your gang can't make good on its threats. A couple of days and the men should be better. A couple days. I promise. She held one of his fingers in each of her hands as she stared longingly into his gray eyes.
I love you, she whispered. In a few days, or after an eternity, I'm yours. Words spoken over us or not, I'm forever yours.
We are already one in our hearts. The good spirits know the truth of that. They want us to be together. They've already proven it and will watch over us. Don't worry. We'll have the word said over us. He started away, but turned back with a haunted look in his eyes. I only wish Zed could be there when we're married. Dear spirits, I wish he could. And that he was here to help me now. When he looked back from the corner at the end of the hall, Colin threw him a kiss. She shuffled into her empty, lonely rooms and threw herself on her big bed. She thought about what Nadine said.
Should have told me about you.
Colin wept in frustration.
So you're not going to be sleeping up here tonight?
Kara said when he walked past. And what would make you think I was? Richard asked. Kara shrugged.
You made us wait around the corner.
Maybe I just wanted to kiss Colin goodnight without you two passing judgment on my skill. Kara and Raina both smiled, the first he had seen from them all day.
I have already seen you kiss the Mother Confessor, Kara said. You appear quite talented at it. It always leaves her breathless and wanting more.
Even though he didn't feel like smiling, he did anyway because he was glad to see them smiling. That doesn't mean I'm talented, it just means she loves me.
I've been kissed, Kara said, and I've seen you kiss. I believe I can say with some authority that you are talented at the task. We watched you from around the corner tonight.
Richard tried to look indignant as he felt his face going red. I gave you orders to stay down here.
It is our responsibility to watch over you. To do that, we can't let you out of our sight. We can't follow such orders.
Richard shook his head. He couldn't be angry over the violation of orders. How could he when they were risking his anger to protect him? They hadn't endangered Colin in doing so. What do you two think of Drefin?
He's your brother, Lord Ra, Raina said. The resemblance is obvious.
I know the resemblance is obvious. I mean, what do you think of him?
We don't know him, Lord Ra, Raina said.
I don't know him either. Look, I'm not going to be angry if you tell me you don't like him. In fact, I'd really like to know if you don't. What about you, Kara? What do you think of him?
She shrugged. I've never kissed either of you, but from what I have seen, I would rather kiss you.
Richard put his hands on his hips. What does that mean?
I was hurt yesterday, and he helped me. But I don't like the fact that Master Drefin came now, when Marlin and Nadine came.
Richard sighed. My thoughts, too. I ask people not to judge me because of who my father was, and I find myself doing that with him. I'd really like to trust him. Please, both of you, if you have any reason for concern, don't be afraid to come and tell me.
Well, Kara said, I don't like his hands.
What do you mean?
He has hands like Darkin Rawl. I have already seen them caressing fawning women. Darkin Rawl did that too.
Richard threw his hands up.
When did he have time to do that? He was with me most of the day.
He found the time, when you were talking to soldiers and when you were out checking on the men with Nadine. It didn't take him long. The women found him, I have never seen so many women batting their lashes at a man. You have to admit he is fine to look upon. Richard didn't see what was so especially fine about his looks.
Have any of these women not been willing?
Her answer was a long moment in coming. No, Lord Rawl.
Well, I guess I've seen other men who acted like that. Some of them have been my friends. They liked women, and women liked them. As long as the women are willing, I can't see that it's any of my business. I'm more concerned about other things.
Like what?
I wish I knew.
If you learn that he is here innocently and only means to help, as he says, then you can be proud of him, Lord Rawl. Your brother is an important man.
He is. How important is he?
Your brother is the leader of his sect of healers.
He is. He never told me that.
No doubt he did not wish to vaunt himself. Humility before the Lord Rawl is the way of Dharans, and one of the tenets of that ancient sect of healers.
I suppose. So he leads these healers?
Yes, Kara said. He is the high priest of the Rakhmos.
The what? Richard whispered. What did you call them?
The Rakhmos, Lord Rawl.
Do you know the meaning of the words?
Kara shrugged. Just that it means healers, that's all. Does it have some meaning to you, Lord Rawl?
Where's Berdine?
In her bed, I would suppose.
Richard started down the hall, calling orders back to them as he went.
Kara, post a guard for the night around Colin's room. Reyna, go wake Berdine and ask her to meet me in my office.
Now, Lord Rawl? Reyna asked. This late?
Yes, please.
Richard took the steps two at a time on the way to his office where waited the journal, Kolo's journal, written in High Dharan. In High Dharan, Rakhmos meant divine wind. Both Shota's warning to Nadine for Richard, the wind hunts him, and the words from the prophecy down in the pit, he must seek the remedy in the wind, spun through his mind.
Chapter 19.
This time, Anne warned, you had better let me do the talking. Understand?
Her eyebrows drew so tight together, Zed thought they might touch. She leaned close enough that he could smell the lingering aroma of sausage on her breath. With a fingernail, she tapped his collar. Another warning, albeit a wordless one. Zed blinked innocently.
If it would please you, by all means. But my tales always have your best interest and our purpose at heart.
Oh, of course, and your clever wit is always a delight, too.
Zed felt that her affected smile was overdoing it. The sardonic praise would have been quite enough. There were accepted customs to such things. The woman really did need to learn where the line was. Zed's gaze again focused beyond her to the problem at hand. He passed a critical eye over the inn's dimly lit door. It was across the street and at the end of a narrow, board walk. Above the alleyway that ran between two warehouses hung a small sign, Jester's Inn. Zed didn't know the name of the large town they had come to in the dark, but he did know that he would have preferred to pass it by. He had seen several inns in the town. This wasn't the one he would have chosen, had he a choice. Jester's Inn looked as if it had either been an afterthought meant to use available space in the back, or else its proprietors wanted to shelter it from the scrutiny of honest people and the critical eye of authority. From the customers Zed had already seen, he was leaning in the direction of the second guess. Most of the men looked to be mercenaries or highwaymen.
I don't like it,
he muttered to himself.
You don't like anything, Anne snapped. You're the most disagreeable man I've ever met.
Zed's eyebrows went up in true surprise.
Why would you say that? I've been told that I'm a most pleasant traveling companion. Do we have any of that sausage left?
Anne rolled her eyes.
No. What is it you don't like this time?
Zed watched a man look both ways before going to the door at the back of the dark alleyway.
Why would Nathan go in there?
Anne looked over her shoulder, across the deserted street of rutted, frozen slush. She fingered a stray wisp of graying hair into the loose knot tied at the back of her head.
To get a hot meal and some sleep.
She scowled back at Zed.
That is, if he's even in there.
I've shown you how to sense the thread of magic I used to hook the tracer cloud to him. You felt it, felt him.
True enough, Anne admitted. Yet now that we finally catch him and know that he's in there, you suddenly don't like it.
That's right,
he said distantly.
I don't like it.
The scowl on Anne's face lost its heat and turned serious. What is it that bothers you?
Look at the sign after the name.
A pair of woman's legs pointed up in the shape of a V. She turned back and peered at him as if he were daft.
Set, the man has been locked up in the Palace of the Prophets for almost 1,000 years.
You just said it. He's been locked up.
Zed tapped the collar called a Radahan around his own neck, the collar she had put on him to capture him and make him do her bidding.
Nathan is not inclined to be locked up in a collar again. It probably took him hundreds of years of planning and the right turn of events to get out of his collar and to escape. I dread to consider how that man may have influenced or even directly altered events through prophecy to bring to pass the turn of fate that allowed him the opportunity to get off his collar. Now you expect me to believe he would go in there just to be with a woman when he has to know you're chasing after him?
Anne stared in stunned disbelief.
Zed, are you saying that you think Nathan may have influenced events, prophecies, just to get his collar off?
Zed looked across the road and shook his head.
I'm just saying I don't like it.
He probably wanted what's in there enough that it distracted him from worrying about me. He simply wanted some female companionship and ignored the dangers of being caught.
You have known Nathan for over 9 centuries. I have only known him a short time.
He leaned down closer to her and lifted an eyebrow.
But even I know better than that. Nathan is anything but stupid. He is a wizard of remarkable talent. You make a serious mistake if you underestimate him.
She watched his eyes a moment.
You're right. It may be a trap. Nathan wouldn't kill me to escape, but beyond that, you may be right.
Zed harumphed.
Zed,
Anne said after a long, uncomfortable silence,
this business with Nathan is important. He must be caught. He's helped me in the past when we have discovered danger in the prophecies, but he is still a prophet. Prophets are dangerous, not because they deliberately wish to cause trouble, but because of the nature of prophecy.
You don't need to convince me of that. I know well the dangers of prophecy.
We have always kept prophets confined at the Palace of the Prophets because of the potential for catastrophe should they roam free. A prophet who wanted mischief could have it. Even a prophet who doesn't wish mischief is dangerous, not only to others but to himself. People usually exact vengeance on the bringer of truth, as if knowing the truth is its cause. Prophecy is not meant to be heard by untrained minds, those having no understanding of magic, much less prophecy. One time, as we sometimes did at his request, we let a woman visit Nathan.
Zed frowned at her.
You took prostitutes to him?
Anne shrugged self-consciously.
We knew the loneliness of his confinement. It wasn't the most desirable solution, but yes, we brought him companionship from time to time. We weren't heartless.
How magnanimous of you.
Anne glanced away from his eyes.
We did what we had to, by locking him in the palace, but we felt sorrow for him. It wasn't his choice to be born with a gift of prophecy. We always warned him not to tell the women any prophecy, but one time he did. The woman ran, screaming, from the palace. We never knew how she escaped before we could stop her. She spread word of the prophecy before we could find her. It started a civil war. Thousands died. Women and children died. Nathan sometimes seems crazy, out of his senses. Sometimes he seems to me to be the most dangerously unbalanced person I've ever known. Nathan views the world not only by what he sees around him, but through the filter of prophecy that visits his mind. When I confronted him, he professed not to remember the prophecy or having told the young woman anything. I only found out much later when I was able to link several prophecies that one of the children who died was a boy named in prophecy as one who would go on to rule through torture and murder. Untold tens of thousands would have died had that boy lived and grown into a man, but Nathan had choked off that dangerous fork in prophecy. I have no idea how much that man knows but won't disclose. A prophet has the potential to just as easily cause great harm. A prophet who wished power would have a fair chance of ruling the world.
Zed was still watching the door.
So you locked them away?
Yes.
Zed picked at a thread on his maroon robes. He looked down at her squat form in the dim light.
And I am first wizard. If I didn't understand, I wouldn't be helping you.
Thank you, she whispered.
Zed considered their options. There weren't many.
What you are saying, if I understand you, is that you don't know if Nathan is sane. But even if he is, he has the potential to be dangerous.
I guess so. But Nathan has often helped me to spare people suffering. Hundreds of years ago, he warned me about Darken Rawl and told me of a prophecy that a war wizard would be born, that Richard would be born. We worked together to see to it that Richard would be safe from interference as he grew, so that you would have the time to help raise your grandson into the kind of man who would use his ability to help people.
For that you have my gratitude, Zed offered. But you put this collar around my neck, and I don't like that one bit.
I understand. It's not something I liked doing, nor am I proud of what I did. Sometimes desperate need calls for desperate acts. The good spirits will have the final say on my actions. The sooner we get Nathan, the sooner I will take the Radahan from your neck. I don't enjoy holding you prisoner by that collar and making you help me, but in view of the dire consequences should I fail to get Nathan, I do as I feel I must.
Zed aimed a thumb over his shoulder.
I also don't like that.
Anne didn't look. She knew what he was pointing at.
What does a red moon have to do with Nathan? It's most peculiar, but what does one have to do with the other?
I'm not saying it has anything to do with Nathan. I just don't like it.
With the thick clouds of the last few days, they had been slowed at night, both by the darkness and also by the difficulty seeing the tracer cloud he had hooked to Nathan. Fortunately, they had been close enough to sense the link of magic without having to see the tracer cloud. The tracer cloud was only used to get its tracker close enough to sense the link. Zed knew they were very near to Nathan, within a few hundred feet. This close to the object of the trace, the link's magic distorted Zed's senses, his ability to judge with the aid of his magic, his capacity to access his familiar ability with his gift. This close, his magic was like a bloodhound on scent, so concentrated on the object of its search that it disregarded anything else but the trail. It was an uncomfortable form of blindness, and another reason for his unease. He could break the link, but that was risky before they actually had Nathan. Once broken, it couldn't be re-established without physical contact. The snow flurries of the last few days had slowed them and made the going cold and miserable. Earlier in the day, the clouds had at last cleared away, even if they had left behind the bitter wind to vex them. They had been looking forward to the moonrise and the light it would provide as they closed in on Nathan. They had both watched in stunned silence when the moon had risen. It had risen red. At first, they thought that it might be a lingering haze that was causing it, but with the moon well overhead, Zed knew it was not being caused by some innocent atmospheric event. Worse, with the recent cloud cover, he didn't know how long it had been since the moon had turned red.
Zed, Anne finally asked into the brooding silence, do you know what it means?
Zed looked away, pretending to scan the shadows.
Do you? You've lived a lot longer than I. You must know something about such a sign.
He could hear her fussing with her wool cloak.
You are a wizard of the First Order. I would defer to your expertise in such matters.
Oh, you all of a sudden think my judgment worthwhile?
Zed, let's not joust with words about this. I know that such a sign is without precedent in my experience, but I do recall a reference to a red moon in an ancient text, a text from the Great War. The book didn't say what it meant, only that it brought great alarm. Zed squatted in the shadow of the corner of the building they hid behind. He leaned his back against the clapboards and held a hand out in invitation. Anne sat beside him, deeper in the shadow.
In the Wizard's Keep, there are dozens of libraries. Huge libraries. Most at least as large as the vault of books at the Palace of the Prophets. Many a great deal larger. There are also many books of prophecy there.
There were books of prophecy at the keep that were considered so dangerous that they were kept locked behind the powerful shields protecting the first wizard's private enclave. Not even the old wizards who had lived at the keep when Zed was young were allowed to read those prophecies. Even though he had access to them after he became first wizard, Zed had not read nearly all of them. The ones he had read left him in sleepless sweats.
"Dear spirits," he went on, "there are so many books at the keep that I've not even read all the titles. There used to be staffs of curators for each library. Each knew the books in his section of the stacks. Long ago, well before my time, these curators were gathered when an answer was sought. Each knew his own books and could speak up if his particular books held information on the subject in question. In this way, it was a relatively simple task to locate the reference volumes or prophecies that might help with the problem at hand. When I was very young, there were only two wizards left acting as curators. Two men could not begin to tap the knowledge held there. A plethora of information is held in those books, but finding a specific bit of it is a formidable challenge. The guidance of the gift is needed to even begin to narrow the search. Needing information from the libraries is like being adrift in the ocean and needing a drink of water. Information is in overabundance, yet you can die of thirst for it before you can locate it. When I was young, I was guided as to what were the more important books of history, magic, and prophecy. I mostly confined my studies to those books.
What about the Red Moon? Anne asked. What did the books you read say of it?
I only recall once reading about a Red Moon. What I read wasn't very explicit, mentioning it only obliquely. I wish I had thought to inquire into the subject further, but I didn't. There were other matters in the books that were of greater importance at the time and demanded my attention, matters that were real and not hypothetical.
What did this book say?
If I recall correctly, and I'm not saying that I do, it said something about a breach between worlds. It said that in the event of such a breach, the warning would be 3 nights of a red moon.
3 nights? For all we know, with the clouds we've had, we could already have had our 3 nights. What if there were clouds all the time? The warning would be missed.
Zed squinted in concentration as he tried to recall what he had read.
No, it said that the one to whom the warning was directed would see all 3 nights of the warning, all 3 nights of the red moon.
What exactly is meant by such a warning? What kind of breach could there be between worlds?
I wish I knew.
Zed thumped his head of wavy white hair back against the wall.
When the boxes of Ordin were opened by Darkenrall, and the Stone of Tears came into this world from another, and the Keeper of the Underworld was near to coming into our world through the breach, there was never a red moon.
Then maybe the red moon doesn't mean that there is a breach. Perhaps you recall it wrongly.
Perhaps. But I recall most vividly are my thoughts at the time. I remember picturing a red moon in my mind and telling myself to remember such an image, and that if I ever saw it for real, I must remember that it was grave trouble, and I must at once search out the meaning of the sign.
Anne touched his arm, an act of compassion she had never done before.
Zed, we almost have Nathan. We'll have him tonight. When we do, I'll take the Radahan from your neck so that you can hurry to Aedon Drill and see to this matter. In fact, as soon as we have Nathan, we will all go. Nathan will understand the seriousness of this and will help. We'll go to Aiden Drill with you and help.
Although Zed didn't like that this woman had insisted he come with her to capture Nathan, he had come to understand how afraid she was of what could happen with Nathan free, and that she needed his help. At times, he had difficulty maintaining his indignation. He knew how desperate she was to keep the prophecies from being loosed along with Nathan. Zed knew how dangerous it could be if people were exposed to raw prophecy. He had been lectured since he was a boy on the dangers of prophecy, even for a wizard.
"Sounds like a worthwhile bargain to me. I help you get Nathan back, and you too help me find the meaning of the Red Moon."
"A bargain, then. We work together willingly. I must admit it will be a pleasant change of affairs."
"Is that so?"
Zed asked.
"Then why don't you take this collar off me?"
"I will, just as soon as we have Nathan."
"Nathan means more to you than you have admitted."
She was silent a moment.
"He does. We have worked together for centuries. He can be trouble on two legs, but somewhere in all that bluster, Nathan has a noble heart."
Her voice lowered as she turned her head away. Zed thought she wiped a hand at her eyes.
"I care greatly for that incorrigible, wonderful man."
Zed peeked around the corner at the inn's silent door.
"I still don't like it,"
he whispered.
"Something about this is wrong. I wish I knew what it was."
"So," she finally asked, "what are we going to do about Nathan?"
"I thought you wanted to do the talking."
"Well, I guess you have convinced me that we should be careful. What do you think we should do?"
"I'll go in there alone and ask for a room. You wait outside. If I find him before he leaves, I'll surprise him and put him down. If he comes out before I find him, or if something goes wrong, you seize him."
"Zed, Nathan is a wizard. I'm only a sorceress. If he had his Radahan around his neck, I could easily control him, but he is without it."
Zed mulled it over for a moment. They couldn't take a chance on his getting away. Beyond that, Anne could be hurt. They would have a difficult time of finding Nathan again. Once he knew they were onto him, he might figure out the tracer cloud and possibly unhook it. That was not likely, though.
"You're right,"
he said at last.
"I'll cast a web outside the door so that if he comes out it will hobble him, and then you can snap that infernal collar around his neck."
"That sounds a good idea. What sort of web will you use?"
"As you've said yourself, we can't fail."
He studied her eyes in the dim light.
"Max, I can't believe I'm actually doing this,"
he muttered.
"Give me the collar for a moment."
Anne searched under her cloak for the pouch at her waist. When her hand came out, the light of the Red Moon glinted dully off the Radahan.
"This is the same one he wore?"
Zed asked.
"For almost 1,000 years.
Zed grunted. He took the collar in his hands and let his magic flow into the cold object of subjugation, let it mingle with the magic of the collar. He could feel the warm hum of the additive magic the collar possessed, and he could feel the icy tingle of its subtractive magic. He handed back the collar.
"I've keyed the spell to his Radahan."
"What spell are you going to weave?"
she asked in a suspicious tone. He considered the resolve in her eyes.
"A light spell. If he comes out without me, he will have 20 of his heartbeats to get that around his neck, or the light web will ignite."
If she didn't get the collar around his neck in time to extinguish the spell, Nathan would be consumed by it. Without the collar, there would be no escape for Nathan from such a spell. With it, he would escape the spell, but then there would be no escape from her. A double bind. At that moment, Zed didn't much like himself. Anne took a deep breath.
"Someone else coming out won't trigger it, will they?"
Zed shook his head.
"I will link it to the tracer cloud. The spell will recognize him and only him by that, and that alone."
His voice lowered in warning.
"If you don't get it around him in time, and it ignites, then others beside Nathan will be hurt or killed if they're close enough. If you can't get that around his neck for any reason, Then you make sure you get away in time. He may prefer death over having that around his neck again.
Chapter 20. As he ambled in, surveying the gloomy room, Zed realized that his heavy maroon robes with black sleeves and cowled shoulders were out of place. The mellow lamplight showed off the three rows of silver brocade at each cuff, and the thicker gold brocade running around the neck and down the front. A red satin belt set with a gold buckle cinched the waist of the rich robes. Zed missed his simple robes, but they were long gone, at Adi's insistence. The old sorceress had chosen his new disguise. For powerful wizards, simple accoutrements were the equivalent of military dress. Zed suspected she just didn't like his old robes and preferred him in this. He missed Adi, and felt sorrow for the heartache she must feel at believing him dead. Nearly everyone thought he was dead. When they had time, maybe he would have Anne write a message in her journey book, letting Adi know he was alive. He felt the most sorrow, though, for Richard. Richard needed him. Richard had the gift, and without proper instruction he was as helpless as an eaglet fallen from the nest. At least Richard had the Sword of Truth to help protect him, for now. Zed intended to go to Richard just as soon as they had Nathan. It wouldn't be long, and then he could hurry on his way to Richard. The innkeeper eyed Zed's flashy outfit, his gaze snagging on the gold belt buckle. A collection of scraggy patrons dressed in furs, tattered leather, and ragged wool watched from a few booths at the wall to the right. The two plank tables sat empty on the straw-covered floor, waiting for diners or drinkers.
"Rooms are a silver," the innkeeper said in a disinterested tone. "If you'd like company, it's an extra silver."
"It would appear that my choice of outfits has turned out to be rather costly," Zed observed.
The burly innkeeper smiled with one side of his mouth as he held out a meaty hand, palm up.
"The price is the price. You want a room or not?"
Zed dropped a single silver in the man's hand.
"Third door on the left."
He nodded his head of curly brown hair toward the hall in the back.
"Interested in company, old man?"
"You'd have to share it with the lady who called. I was thinking you might be interested in a bit more profit. A considerable bit more."
The man's brow twitched with curiosity as he closed his fist around the silver coin.
"Meaning?"
"Well, I, heard. A dear old friend of mine has been known to stop here. I've not seen him in quite a while. If he were here tonight, and you could direct me to his room, I'd be so overwhelmed with joy and happiness to see him again that I'd foolishly part with a gold piece. A full gold piece."
The man looked him up and down again.
"This friend of yours have a name?"
"Well," Zed said in a low voice, "like many of your other patrons, he has a problem with names. He can't seem to remember them for very long, and has to keep thinking up new ones. But I can tell you that he's tall, older, and with white hair down to his broad shoulders."
The man stroked his tongue across the inside of his cheek.
"He's busy at the moment."
Zed produced the gold piece, but pulled it back when the innkeeper reached for it.
"So you say. I'd like to decide for myself just how busy he is."
"Then it's another silver."
Zed forced himself to keep his voice down.
"For what?"
"For the lady's time and company."
"I've no intention of availing myself of your lady."
"So you say. When you see her with him, you might have a change of mood and decide to try to rekindle your youth. It's my policy to collect the money first. If she tells me you gave her no more than a smile, then you can have the silver back."
Zed knew there was no chance of that. It would be his word against hers, and her word would carry the sweet ring of extra profit, if not the truth. But in the scheme of things, the price was of no consequence, no matter how much it irked him. Zed dug into an inner pocket and handed over the silver coin. "Last room on the right,"
the innkeeper said as he turned away. He turned back to Zed. And we have a guest in the next room who doesn't want to be disturbed.
I won't bother your guests.
He gave Zed a cunning grin. Plain as she is, I offered her a little companionship, no extra charge, and she told me that if anyone disturbed her rest, she'd skin me alive. A woman with enough brass to come in here alone? I believe her. I'm not giving her her silver piece back if you wake her. I'll take it out of your hide. Understand?
Zed nodded absently as he gave brief consideration to asking for a meal. He was hungry, but reluctantly dismissed the thought.
Would you happen to have a back door, in case I need some night air?
Zed didn't want Nathan slipping out the wrong door.
I'd understand if it cost extra.
We're backed up to the blacksmith's shop, the innkeeper said as he walked away. There's no other door.
Last room on the right. Only one way in, one way out. Something about this was wrong. Nathan wouldn't be so foolish. Yet Zed could feel the air crackling with the magic of his link. As dubious as he was that Nathan would be so conveniently bedded down for them, he moved silently down the dark hall. He listened intently for anything out of the ordinary, but heard only the well-practiced, feigned sounds of passion from a woman in the second room to the left. The end of the hall was lit by a single candle on a wooden bracket to the side. From the next to last room, Zed could hear the soft snores of the brassy lady who didn't want to be disturbed. He hoped it wouldn't come to that, and that she would sleep through the whole thing. Zed put his ear close to the last door on the right. He heard soft, throaty laughter from a woman. If this went wrong, she might be hurt. If it went very wrong, she might be killed. He could wait, but having Nathan distracted would certainly be convenient. The man was a wizard, after all. Zed didn't know how strongly Nathan felt about being captured. Zed knew how he would feel about it. That decided him. He couldn't afford not to take the opportunity of the distraction. Zed threw open the door, casting a hand out, igniting the air with silent, confusing flashes of heat and light. The naked couple on the bed cringed away, covering their eyes. With a fist of air, Zed threw Nathan off the woman and over the far side of the bed. With Nathan grunting and flailing at the air, Zed seized the woman's wrist and threw her back out of the way. She snatched the sheet with her. As the flashes of light sparked out, and before she was even able to throw the sheet around herself, Zed loosed a web, paralyzing her where she stood. Almost simultaneously, he cast a similar web at the man behind the bed, except this web was laced with serious consequences should he try to fend it off with magic of his own. This was no time to be polite or indulgent. With hardly a sound, other than a bit of thumping onto the floor, the gloomy room was suddenly silent. Only a single candle on a washstand flickered weakly. Zed was relieved it had gone so well, and he hadn't had to hurt the woman. He rounded the bottom of the bed to see the man on the floor, frozen in place, his mouth open in the beginning of a scream, his hands clawed to defend himself. It wasn't Nathan. Zed stared in disbelief. He could feel the magic of the hook in the room. He knew this was who he had been chasing. He leaned over the man.
I know you can hear me, so listen carefully. I'm going to release the magic holding you, but if you cry out, I will put it back on and leave you like that forever. Think carefully before you dare to call for help. As you may have already surmised, I'm a wizard, and anyone who comes will not be able to do anything to save you should you displease me.
Zed passed his hand before the man, pulling back the veil of the web. The man scooted back to the wall, but he remained silent. He was older, but not as old as Nathan appeared. His hair was white, but wavy rather than Nathan's straight hair. It wasn't as long, either, but the short description Zed had given the innkeeper would have been close enough for him to think this was the man Zed sought.
"Who are you?"
Zed asked.
"William's my name. You'd be Zed."
Zed straightened.
"How do you know that?"
"The fellow you'd be looking for told me."
He gestured toward the nearby chair.
"Mind if I pull on my trousers? I've a feeling I'll not be needing them off anymore tonight."
Zed tilted his head toward the chair, signaling for William to go ahead.
Talk while you do it. And keep in mind what I told you about my being a wizard. I know when a man is telling me a lie. Keep in mind, too, that I'm suddenly in a very foul mood.
Zed wasn't exactly telling the truth about being able to detect a lie, but he reasoned that the man didn't know that. He was, however, telling the truth about his mood.
I run into the man you were chasing. He didn't tell me his name. He offered me...
William glanced to the woman as he pulled the trousers up.
Can she hear this?
Don't you worry about her. Worry about me.
Zed gritted his teeth.
Talk.
Well, he offered me.
He peered at the woman. Her wrinkled face was frozen in a startled expression.
He offered me a purse if I'd do him a favor.
What favor?
Taking his place. He told me to ride like the keeper himself was after me until I got at least this far. He said that when I got here, I could slow, rest, or stop, whatever my choice. He told me that you'd be catching up with me.
And he wanted that.
William buttoned his trousers, plopped back into the chair, and started pulling on his boots.
He said I wouldn't be able to lose you, that sooner or later you'd catch up with me, but he didn't want that to happen until at least after I arrived here. Fast as I was moving, I must admit that I didn't think you'd be so close on my heels, so I thought to enjoy some of my profits.
William stood and stuffed an arm into his brown wool shirt.
It told me that I was to give you a message.
Message? What message?
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.